convened the House Special Committee on Ways and Means. Today is September 8, 2005. It's 1 o'clock, and we're present in Fairbanks, Alaska. And present are here in Fairbanks are Representative David Guttenberg and Representative John Coghill, and I'm Representative Bruce Weirach, the chair of this Special Committee on Ways and Means. If there are legislators online, could you please speak up and identify yourselves for the record, please? Okay, no legislator online, is that correct? All right, we have potential call-ins by committee members, Representative Moses, Representative Seaton, Representative Wilson, and Representative Samuels. Also, Representative Roekberg will either call in or will be present here in Fairbanks. I want to thank the Legislative Information Office folks here in Fairbanks. Larice and Melba have been very helpful, and also the hospitality of the people of Fairbanks has been great since we've been up here. At least I've been up here from Juneau. I appreciate the rain today. And I also have never been in Fairbanks this time of year, and Vermont has nothing on around here.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful place, and I've appreciated that. The purpose of the Ways Special Committee meeting today in Fairbanks is to do three things. One is to hear testimony from Melanie Milhorn, the director of the State Retirement and Benefits. One is to hear testimony from David Teal, the director of the legislature's legislative finance arm. And then the next purpose is to take public comment and testimony on the issue before the committee. And let me be as specific as I can about what the issue before the committee is so that we can focus public testimony and also testimony from the witnesses and then further questions by any legislator to the witness. And also, if there's questions that are concerns by the public, to keep them focused on the issue. And the issue is the unfunded liability of the PERS and TERS systems, the public employment retirement system and the teachers' employment retirement system. Presently, there's roughly a $5.7 billion unfunded liability, and it's a bit of a question as what that really means in terms of the operation of those systems, what that means on the current health of the system, what it means to people who are working in those two systems and who are vested in those systems or who will be vested or could be vested in those systems, and also present retirement of those systems. It's incumbent upon the state of Alaska to help have a healthy retirement system and have it funded to the extent that we have confidence both in our existing members who are members of the system and also who are retirees and part of that system right now. This is not a hearing to delve into any policy debates over whether we should have a defined contribution or a defined benefit plan. That is a policy decision the legislature has made, and we are not revisiting that decision. What we are looking at is the financial implications related to an unfunded liability and what, if anything, the legislature should do about it. So the purpose of these hearings, we've had one in Fairbanks, we've had one in Anchorage, we've had one in Fairbanks, we'll have one in Kenai, and we'll have another one in Juneau and possibly a wrap-up in either Juneau or Anchorage, is to get testimony from knowledgeable individuals, take testimony from the public, and then come up with whether it's feasible to do anything. If it is, what are the range of options to present to the legislature to do something about that unfunded liability? And the range of options are wide open. Nothing, to make an appropriation, to make policy determination, statute, or regulation.
Who's this?
Or to help provide guidance to the new board that will be dealing with the new system and work with them in a more cohesive manner to address some of the unfunded liabilities. So I hope that's all clear. Last meeting in Fairbanks, in Anchorage, we did not take testimony. What we did is we heard from people who are nationally interested, nationally recognized experts on state retirement systems, to place Alaska's system in a context of a national issue. And nationally, state-funded retirement systems are in a bit of a fix. There are shortfalls nationally, and Alaska is not different from most other state pension plans. There's a few that are fine and that have no significant liabilities. And there are other states that have chosen to do things like pension revenue bonds, that have chosen to implement policies to provide returns on investments that are significant other than what Alaska has done. And so it was to sort of place Alaska's system in a context of a national perspective. We also heard from Joe Yushchenko, who had done some work for the legislature's the legislative council on the system, and we also had heard from other testimony from Melanie Milhorn and Mr. Teal on the system in Alaska. So again, it's our intent to hear from these individuals, and we had passed out questions that we had asked these folks to identify and focus pretty much exclusively on Alaska system today, and then take as much public testimony as we can from you guys and you folks in the audience and also those who are online. So I hope that's sort of a context and a clarification of what the meeting is and why. And then finally, let me wrap up before we start with Ms. Milhorn, that the Ways and Means Committee was set up by the Alaska State House of Representatives during a time when we had a roughly $650 million budget shortfall. With the price of oil so significantly high, the deficit has been wiped out, and we now have a surplus to deal with. So ways the state would deal with its deficit and the means to fund that deficit so that we had a healthy fiscal situation has been more or less taken over by events because of oil prices. And that does not mean we do not need a long-term fiscal plan to deal with the vagaries of the oil market, because we're always going to be subject to that sort of situation until we get some sort of consistent recurring revenue source to the state that's stable. But what we do have right now in front of the committee, and with the blessing of the speaker and actually the direction of the speaker and the House leadership, is it has tasked the Ways and Means Committee to look at this specific unfunded liability in the PERS and TERS system, which was brought to light this last session, and try and come up with ways to deal with and means to deal with that situation. So that's where this kind of a hearing fits within the strategic context of the House Special Committee on Ways and Means. So before we begin, I thought I would ask those present, Representative Kockielips and Guttenberg, if you had any questions or comments. And I do appreciate your attendance today, even though you're not members of the committee.
Just to find out who's online,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Again, I want to request that if there's any legislator online, that you just go ahead and identify yourself now.
This is Paul Seaton down in Homer.
Hi, Representative Seaton.
And this is Peggy Wilson in Wrangell.
Hi, Representative Wilson.
This is Representative Roachberg in Anchorage.
Hi, Representative Roachberg. Is that it? All right. Well, the committee does have a quorum. Representative Guttenberg.
I understand that there was a death in Representative Roachberg's family, and he might be outside, but he also might be online listening.
Oh, that's correct. Representative Roachberg, are you online? I'm sure Representative Grunberg, of all members, will pipe up when he becomes online. And also, Representative Wilson, I want to wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you.
Debbie,
are there other legislators coming, or do you want to shift around over there so that
Legislators may show up from time to time. I know individuals indicated they may stop by. Representative Ramirez, Representative Kelly may stop by. If you feel like it may be better for you to sit here so the people who are present aren't staring at the back of your shoulders, that's fine with me. So why don't we do that, and then if legislators come in, we can accommodate them at the table. So I appreciate you making way. Anything else, Representative Detmer? Representative Cockfield? Okay. And for the folks who are present here, these representatives also have lives apart from legislative work, and they may sneak out and come back from time to time. So you know that in advance. Okay, we're going to start, according to the agenda, with testimony by Melanie Milhorn. Ms. Milhorn, if you could go ahead and identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please. You've been tasked by the committee to look at several specific issues, and I understand your testimony to be as you're going to go through the issues we've asked you to identify and try and provide a response.
For the record, my name is Melanie Milhorn, and I'm the Director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits Expenditure at YROC, and Representative Cockhill, and other
Guttenberg.
Thank you for this opportunity to be here. There's some presentation material that was prepared that is dated September 7th, and it's in response to some very specific questions that were posed to the commission. And so I'd like to go to hearing.
Now, we can't hear it at all.
All right. Let me start again. I would like to respond to some very specific questions that were posed to the Division of Retirement and Benefits by Chair Wyrock. And there's presentation material that the division put together. It is dated September 7th. And if you want to follow along with this material,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I have an August 24th, but I don't have a September 7th. Is there some additional information that's coming out through the LIO?
Ginny will fax it to the LIOs there. It's an email I had sent to the division on September 7th, and it's one-page series of questions. I think what Ms. Milhorn had planned to do is provide the questions and then the response, so you won't be missing out on anything.
Okay, we'll watch for the facts. Thank you.
Does everyone have that information?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to begin.
This is Peggy, and I don't have that information either. So,
Ginny Osterman, are you online?
She just stepped out of the office here.
Okay, she's going to have to get that to Rangel and Homer, and make sure she faxes the other. And I think she's already faxed the information from David Teal to those offices. Okay.
Please send it to Petersburg, also to the Petersburg LIO. Thank you.
Terry, could you make note of that?
Yeah, and I don't have what David Teal has. Either so.
Terry Harvey? Just a sec. Terry Harvey?
Yes, go ahead for Rep. Wyrock.
Are you making note of the offices that need this information?
Yes, we're going to get that out to them right now.
Thank you. For the record, Representative Ramirez from Fairbanks is present.
Ketchikan LIO 2, please.
Okay, Terry. I don't know why that should have been sent. All right.
All right. The first question that was posed was, what is the amount of the unfunded liability for PERS insurers? And as Representative Wyrock already noted, right now, as of the valuation for June 30th, 2004, the unfunded liability for PERS is approximately $3.4 billion, and for TERS, it's $3.2 billion for a total of $5.7 billion. That's as of the draft valuation.
Is that June 30, 2005, you mean? Or 2004?
2004. That's as of the draft valuation information available for 2004. Now, at this point, there will be another draft, or there will be another valuation on the systems prepared, and that's information as of June 30th, 2005. It takes approximately 6 to 7 months for our retained actuary to actually go through the analysis, go through the data, and complete evaluation on each of our systems. And that information is available in draft form in March of the following year. So what the schedule is right now is that the information for the last one-year period ending June 30th of 2005, the actuary will go through its analysis, it will prepare its information, it will be available for dissemination in a draft form as of April 2006. And that information was actually reviewed by the PERS and TERS board in March. They did not finalize those valuations, so they are still in draft. The board members had requested some additional information before they were comfortable finalizing those valuations.
Do you have a draft valuation for March 2005?
We have a draft valuation as of June 30th, 2004. the preparation has not begun for the valuation that is dated June 30th, 2005. That information goes to the actuary, is analyzed, and is available in March of 2006. That's the schedule for valuation.
Chair, just a question on how you're doing the evaluation. Are you still using Mercer, I assume?
Mercer is our retained actuary right now. However, the division did go out for a request for proposal for actuarial services, and that process is complete right now, and we would expect to award a contract for actuarial services based on the successful bidder sometime in October. And we were fortunate and did have a very good response to our RFP. There's actually probably 5 actuarial firms that have a national reputation for working with government pension plans. And out of those 5 national firms, we received proposals from 4, which is pretty remarkable. So we're going to go through that process, evaluate those proposals, and then award a contract for actuarial services. Thank you for the question. The second question is, when we talk about unfunded liability, what does that mean? There are different terms that people use when they reference this unfunded liability. So the question was, you know, what does that mean? What is the definition? What is, when we talk about deficit or debt, the unfunded liability is defined as the excess of the accrued liability over the assets of the plan at the valuation date. And that's a very important concept, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later when we talk about actually calculating the unfunded liability for the system. The deficit is simply the amount by which some money falls short of what is necessary, and a debt is just the amount that is promised and is owed. It's common to use terms such as unfunded liability, deficit, and debt. It's less common to use the term indebtedness. And getting into how is the unfunded liability calculated? Each year, as I described earlier, the retained actuary will go through a very detailed process of determining what the accrued liability is for future obligations of the system. And that valuation report, okay, if you go to the website for the actuarial valuations are found for PERS and for TERS, and you can go back from 1976 to the draft valuation of 2004. This information and this valuation is available. One who wishes to receive that information, it's very good information, and it's the basis. That's the foundation.
Mr. Chairman, could I interrupt? We're getting bleed over from some other microphone or something, and we can't hear the presentation.
Okay. I
heard you. Let's see. I hear somebody talking on a microphone. Is somebody offline, off net? Well, I felt like a teacher there. let's be quiet and let the speaker talk. Thank you.
I really think somebody didn't have their mute button pushed.
Okay, yeah, that's probably right. Okay, class.
Okay, so the valuation itself sets out the assumptions that underlie the valuation. That's found in Section 2.3. And what is important to remember in this process is that this is an annual process. This is a process whereby this system is evaluating and telling policy makers exactly what the status is of their retirement system. This is a snapshot in time. This is information as of June 30th of that year for those members that determines the accrued liability. And when you look at that information, it's important information because what it does is it tells you what your future obligation is for these members as of that date. But it's also important to remember that valuations are subject to change year after year. So it is not it's a process that is ongoing that has changes that result from it that incorporate gains and losses to the system as of that date. A very important component of the valuation report is that it sets out and it determines what the accrued liability is. It compares the assets of the system to the liabilities of the system, and by doing so, it establishes what is the employer contribution rate. What amount does the system need to collect from the employers in order to pay for promised benefits for its members? So that's very key. It's very integral to this process. Board members would look at the valuation process prepared by the actuary, and then the actuary makes a recommendation to the board about what the employer contribution rate needs to be. If your system has accrued liability that is higher than the valuation of your assets, it results in an unfunded liability. That unfunded liability for the system as of that point in time is then amortized over a 25-year period to pay off the unfunded liability. That's how the system mechanically works. If you have a deficit, if you have an unfunded liability, then that amount, that $5.7 billion, is amortized over the 25-year period in the form of your employer contribution rate. Now, as of the information as of June 30th of 2004, the actuary recommended for PERS that the employer contribution rate be set at 28.19%. And when the actuary is making that recommendation, if the board were to have approved that recommendation, then what that would do is it would set that rate in place for the next 25 years to pay off the unfunded liability. Two components to the employer contribution rate. One is the normal cost rate and one is the past service rate. That makes up the 28.19%. And for TERS, as of June 30th of 2004, that amount, as recommended by the actuary, was 41%. That's what they recommended in order to pay off the unfunded liability for the teacher's retirement system. So that is an annual process. And
Ms. Chairman, could not hear the percentage that Ms. Milhorn said.
The percentage for the teacher's retirement system, the recommendation from the actuary was that the rate go to 41.78% for employers beginning FY07. Another part of the, a subset of the question was that, is it likely that the events on which this calculation is based will occur? And in order to respond to that, when I talked earlier about the assumptions that are in the system found in Section 2.3, those are economic assumptions and demographic assumptions. And what that contemplates is that that process, those assumptions, are expected to, those are the assumptions in place in order to pay for those future obligations, but it's also known that those assumptions may change over time. For example, the medical cost trend was reset in 2002 as of that valuation. a new mortality table was in place as of 2000. So while those are the assumptions in place as of that valuation, those assumptions are subject to change based on the system's actual experience. So each year when they calculate the liabilities for the system, they measure the assets for the system, and they compare those in order to determine the health of the system, they're comparing against their own experience for the system in order to arrive at that. So if you're expecting that you're going to have 8.25% rate of return and that is not realized, that is not the experience for the system, it's lower than that, then that is factored in. So while those are the assumptions in place, it does not mean that you hit those targets exactly. In fact, the chances of you actually hitting those targets, it's either higher or lower than the targets. Those are the best estimates that are available and are made by our actuaries.
Melanie, I'm sorry, but now I want to just go back and ask you a question. So you're saying that in 2000 they put in a new mortality table, and in 2002 there was a new what?
There was a new medical cost trend.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And question number three is, what does the liability mean in general and in particular for state finances? Contained in this material in the back is a chart that provides the parties with the increase in the employer contribution rate from FY06 through FY09 by different categories. And for the state of Alaska, that information is available, University of Alaska, school districts, municipalities, for total in all categories. And so what you see on this chart is the impact to finances for those various different categories. And you can, for FY06, for example, the increase to the state of Alaska is $40 million for a total of $142 million for FY06.
What does that sheet look like, Melanie?
It's a one-page sheet that is titled Alaska Public Employees Retirement System and Teachers Retirement System, and it provides fiscal information from FY06 through FY09. When you look at all categories for FY06 for all parties, the amount contribution to the system is $386 million, and in FY09, that amount increases to $716 million.
Jenny, if you could send that to me, this is Peggy, I'd appreciate it because I don't have it.
And the projection is that this increments up by 5 percentage points per year. And it's important to note, when we're talking about an increase in 5 percentage points, that that is additive, which means the employer contribution rate for FY06 for PERS set at 16.77. When that's adopted at a 5% increase, 5 percentage points, that means that that rate goes to 21%. So these are 5% increments that are being projected on this sheet.
Chairman, maybe you can give us, you said there was a new mortality rate, maybe you can give us an idea of what other things changed to escalate the scale of increase in the stock market, perhaps, or medical costs, prescription drugs.
Right.
And maybe on the other side of it, what assumptions had changed that actuaries had made?
Sure. Those, if you go back to the valuation as of 2002, that was a pretty dramatic change for the systems. And, for example, what took place is there were some changes in assumptions and there were some experiences that were taken into the system as of that valuation for 2002 that included a change in the medical cost trends and the actual experience as a result of medical costs for the system during that one-year period. Those changes added together, changing the medical cost trend. And when I say that, when you look at the valuation, there was a projection in place that indicated that the medical costs were at 8% and then that would decrement down to the next nine-year period or so. And when they reset that, they recognized that the actual experience for the system year after year was closer to 9 to 10%. And so they reset the medical trend to 12% for the next 3 years, followed by a decline in that medical cost trend. And as I said, those two factors added together for that valuation in 2002 added 10% to the employer contribution rate in 1 year for PERS and CHERS. The other change that occurred during that valuation period, based on a recommendation from Milliman, who audited the system, is that the actuarial valuation method itself needed to be changed. They recommended a change because they used a corridor method. The corridor method looks at a band that surrounds your assets, and it was determined that that band was too narrow. As a result, they recommended what is commonly used with pension systems, which is an asset smoothing method. And the asset smoothing method takes in your gains or your losses to your system in a five-year period to smooth those gains and losses. So 20% of a gain or a loss in any one valuation year would come into your system. It's designed to take the volatility out of spikes in your employer contribution rate. So when they made that change, in order to do so, they had to reset to the market value of assets. And that took in and recognized all the losses for the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system in a one-year period. It added $1 billion to the public employees retirement system and about $600 million to the teachers retirement system. So those are some of the assumption changes and experience and losses that were taken into the system as of the valuation for 2002, which was made available and finalized in 2003, in the spring of 2003, on or around March or April. So that's important to recognize that that valuation, while it's based on all of the accumulation of changes for not only recommended by the by Milliman, who audited the system, but a number of different changes were factored into that valuation. It took the employer contribution rate from PERS from 6.77 to 24.91 in that valuation period. It, for the teacher's retirement system, it took the employer contribution rate from 14% up to 38%. Excuse me, 35% in one valuation year. So that's the time frame associated with that. Those are the changes that occurred during that time period. B talks about credit rating, and we really believe that the Department of Revenue is the party that should really ask or should respond to that particular question. Moving on, additional appropriation. In accordance with Senate Bill 141, Senate Bill 141 was very specific in that it tasked the new board with coming up with short-term and long-term solutions to deal with the unfunded liability. So it's expected that that board will be constituted in October. They will meet and they will provide a report to the legislature on their recommendation associated with additional appropriations. With regard to retirees, the liability has no impact on our retirees. Those benefits are constitutionally protected under the Alaska Constitution, Article 12, Section 7, and that has been upheld in our court system. It's been tested in our court system, and it those benefits cannot be diminished nor impaired. It's a contractual relationship that exists.
Melanie?
Yes.
I realize there's no that the retiree themselves, they aren't affected in any way, but what happened financially to the state and to the other employers when they retire early, and so they have not paid as many years as was projected to begin with, and so that puts a problem within the system, doesn't it?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, are you talking about individuals who, through through a RIP bill would have retired, or are you talking about individuals who may choose to retire early? Say, for example, a Tier 1 employee where the normal retirement is age 55, but they choose to retire earlier. Is it a retirement incentive?
Yeah, both.
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 I would answer that with regard to a retirement incentive, which the state has had multiple. We have not actually calculated that to determine what the impact is, but we do know, based on the most recent analysis prepared in response to House Bill 329, which was a RIP bill, is that due to the rising health care costs, that it makes it exceedingly difficult for the individuals who actually, for the system to actually find a savings in order to let the individual retire early. It's designed to give the individual 3 years of service so long as the individual and the employer make contributions that result in a savings. And we found that when that was analyzed in relation to House Bill 329, that the costs were prohibitive to allow an individual under those circumstances. You almost had to delete the position in order to realize a savings. There was an audit, legislative audit, delved into that a little bit, and one of their conclusions, when I read the report, determined that it was very difficult to go back and peg that savings to the system. So it made it in a situation where there may have been a projection that there would be a savings because you can go in and replace the position or have a higher advanced step placement later on. It may diminish, erode, or change the initial projections upon which you thought you were going to have a savings, but it didn't ultimately materialize into a savings.
Well, I know, for instance, in the school system, and I'm sure it's in other areas also, but in a school system, if you retire somebody early that's high up on the wage scale and you're paying them a high salary, and then you put a new person in their place who is in the bottom initially, right then and there, it saves the school system because they're paying less for this person. But in reality, because of the retirement program, the way it's structured and the guarantees that are in it, what really happens is that person that just retired early, if they retired 2 years early, then they're not paying in for those 2 years. So we really, in the long run, I think probably need to look at that whoever is the persons that get the contract. We really need to look at those areas, because if we haven't, I think the state has done quite a few different things that would allow that to happen, and we really need to know where we're at with that.
In response to the second part of your question, if an individual chooses to retire early under the system, that's actually calculated as part of the process. So the individual, for example, was Tier 1. and normal retirement versus early retirement. If they elect to retire early, they take an actuarial reduction in their benefit, and that is calculated. So we know what those costs are for those situations. So it's not anticipated that that results in an unfunded liability directly to the system. Question about current employees and what the liability means for current employees. It's not a direct impact for our current employees. However, employers do have increases in the employer contribution rates, and that has fiscal impacts for their budgets. Payment of benefits for pension and medical. Retirees will continue to receive their pension and their medical benefits. We talked about this a little bit earlier. When did the unfunded liability begin, and over what period of time has there been a liability? And it is difficult to pinpoint a specific point in time, but we know that there are certain occurrences that happened with the systems that are the contributing factors for our unfunded liability. We know that medical assumptions were too low for some period of time, and that was rectified, that was remedied in 2002. It had the consequence of increasing the employer contribution rate pretty dramatically as a result. We know that beginning in 1997, for approximately a seven-year period, because there were gains in the system, there were surpluses in the system, that it allowed the employer contribution rate to be lowered for that seven-year period, and that was a $460 million savings to the employers. It was a realized savings of approximately $360 million because there's increases in wages factored into that amount that employers had a realized savings and a reduction in their employer contribution rate. And I talked about the asset valuation method being changed as a result of the audit.
We know most of the states around the country have problems with their public employee.
Can't hear you.
We know other states around the country, almost every state has a problem with its public employee retirement system. We have here assumptions that were changed or that were wrong or that were too low. Are these the same problems that they had, or is that unique to Alaska?
I would say in the research, when you look at all of the different retirement systems for the other states, a couple of factors emerge as issues that are common to our retirement systems for PERS and TERS, and that would be loss of investment income during the three-year bear market 2000 through 2001. That's a common occurrence that we share with the other retirement systems. Rising health care costs is another factor you hear that is a common element that's associated with other systems' unfunded liability. The third that you hear, and you have to look at the individual retirement system and determine what their causal factors are. While we have those commonalities, they also are very, very distinctly different. And the articles that you hear are that during that period of time, many of the pension systems enhanced their benefits substantially. And then those promised benefits have to be paid for later. So that is not a circumstance that the public employees retirement system or the teachers retirement system had happened to their system. What the actuarial analysis information that was provided in January of 2005 takes the unfunded liability at the $5.7 billion amount, and the plan changes that you're speaking to represent $500 million out of the $5.7 billion. And out of that, when you look at the $500 million, $400 million is attributed to ad hoc PRPAs, and that leaves you with $100 million in unfunded liability through plan changes with the legislature. And so my analysis is that the legislature has been very judicious in not having that be one of the primary factors, and it's a very small factor associated with the unfunded liability.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead, Representative Roford. And by the way, we have Representative Gatto in line as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Roford. Ms. Milhorn, just two questions real quickly. Refreshing my memory, I'm well aware of the constitutional guarantee under PERS, but are the teachers of the state also constitutionally guaranteed their retirement benefits?
Yep. Through the chair, Representative Roford, yes, they are.
Even though the state, it's, in essence, has not funded those, and the local districts in the main have funded those liabilities in the past?
I think the funding for the teacher's retirement system, while it's not direct, it's indirect.
Can't hear you.
I said, while the funding for the teacher's retirement system is not direct, it's indirectly. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Well, you answered it by saying you felt the Constitution guarantee was attributable also to the teachers of the state. That was my question. So.
Yep, and it is. Those protections in place for members of the teachers of the teachers' retirement system, their benefits are constitutionally protected.
Okay, and you indicated that there was a seven-year period post-1997 that there was a surplus in the system, and you indicated there was some $460 million in savings. Were those reduced contribution rates variously applied over that seven-year period? Is that correct?
What took place, through the chair, Representative Roeperg, is that beginning in 1997-1998, there were surpluses in the system that allowed the actuarial process, when the actuary looked at the assets in the system and compared those with the liabilities in the system, it allowed the employer contribution rate to be lowered.
Right, I understand that. But so they were lowered for a period of seven fiscal years, is that what you're saying, at various amounts?
That's correct. It went from, in 1998 for PERS, it was reduced to 8%, and then that decremented down until it was at 6.77.
I'd appreciate a follow-up on what those were. I'm sure they're in all the plethora of paper we have, but it'd be nice to have that. Those amounts of reduction, both as a percentage and as a dollar amount, as it impacted the state budget.
through the chair, Representative Volkberg, I have that information, and I would be happy to provide that to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and we're also joined by Representative Kelly. Come up. Sure.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Max Gruenberg.
Oh, hi, Representative Gruenberg. Okay. We're getting follow-up questions for the next meeting. Representative Roeperg, thank you.
And we talked about this earlier, but question number six is, what is the division's position regarding the unfunded liability? And as I've spoken to that issue before, there are really three primary factors that contribute to the system's unfunded liability, and that is rising health care costs, loss of investment income, and change in actuarial assumptions to better reflect information, changing information. As a follow-up to that question, have sensitivity analysis on various assumptions, like the rate of return, or medical costs been performed on the system. And a sensitivity analysis is information that we have with regard to the investment return that's found in the valuations for PERS and TERS, and it's in the back of your presentation material. And a sensitivity analysis doesn't necessarily just look at the system's assumption. What it does is it tests various other variables in order to look at the sensitivity associated with that. And we know, for example, two assumptions have a high level of sensitivity associated with them, and that's the investment return and the medical cost. So what the information that's available in the back of your presentation looks at is it isolates the investment return into three specific categories, and it looks at what the employer contribution rate is as a result of that isolation. It uses the assumption that the growth in your population will remain at 1%, and it looks at three cases. It looks at the base case, which is our investment return of 8.25. It looks at an optimistic investment return of 9%. And that's 9% for all future years, so that 25-year period. And pessimistic would be the 7.5. And then if you turn to the chart, it shows you what that represents in a change to the contribution rate for employers over that 25-year amortized period. So you can see the base case as the solid line in the middle for PERS. The prolonged recession, which is the 7.5 investment return, which is net expenses compounded annually. That's the big dotted line at the top, rising up to nearly 40%. And then the growth, which is the 9%, is the bottom dotted line, which takes the rate, it's just above 30%, and it brings it down to over that 25-year period. Should you have that investment return to somewhere around 25%. And the very next page shows that the three scenarios for the teacher's retirement system. And you can see the base case rises up to very nearly 46%. And the optimistic is still right around 44%, and then brings it down below the 40% over that 25-year amortized period. So those are the sensitivity analysis with respect to the investment return. In addition, the last page of your material has some information about what that sensitivity is with regard to an increase in liability and a decrease in market assets, and what that does to the employer contribution rate. This is very back last page. And what that shows you is that a change in our liabilities for the employer contribution rate means that the employer contribution rate will rise by 3.4% per and 4.7% for TERS. When you compare that against your assets, if you lose 5% of your assets, what happens to your employer contribution rate? It represents 3% for PERS and 0.5% for TERS. So the takeaway from that is that your liabilities and an increase in your liabilities have a significant impact on your employer contribution rate, far greater than a change in your net assets, which is what the information provided by the actuary, which is in material provided to Ways and Means members in July 14th, which I understand is on there, is available. It has the last 10 years, and it shows what the change in net assets are for PERS and TERS and what the change in liabilities represents, and it ties back to the $5.7 billion in unfunded liabilities. And if anybody wishes to have that two-page letter from our actuary, I'd be happy to provide that, but I understand it's posted.
Yes, the Chair, Ms. Milhorn, I would like that. This is Representative Gruenberg.
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'd be happy to get that for you.
Thank you.
And yeah, I would like it, too. This is Peggy.
Maybe we should just get it to the committee through Ginny, and she can distribute it for the record.
Are you taking questions at this point?
Yeah, go ahead and inject your question.
Yeah, this is Max Gruenberg. You're talking, and I'm looking at page 3 of your letter under answer number 6, first paragraph, first item, rising health care costs. We have talked a lot about this from an actuarial point of view, but very little from the point of view of what we can do to contain the health care costs. One thing that a number of insurance companies do is maximize the amount that the insurance coverage will cover. I mean, the amount that they'll pay per procedure. Have your actuaries looked in detail at what actuarial effect it would be if we instituted some more stringent reimbursement rates?
Through the Chair, Representative Gruenberg, you had an earlier question on July 14th about medical costs and the rising medical costs, and I just wanted to let you know that that information is being assembled and will be provided to you. But the process that we use right now for medical costs and medical cost containment is we look at those various different plan changes and we'll make a determination about those particular changes. For example, having a preferred provider for and steering our members that direction. That is one area that we're looking at for our retiree population. We have to remember that right now the Alaska Supreme Court has ruled as of June 2003 that medical benefits for members are protected under the Alaska Constitution. As such, you have to be very, very careful about those changes that you make. And what the court ruled is that you can make changes to your system. However, any increases to benefits or any decreases to benefits must be met with corresponding increases. In 1999, the plan